Frank didn't intend to run, no matter who the men had been. But he was curious, and he stepped outside the little ranch house to satisfy that curiosity. Only a faint red glow remained in the western sky, all that was left of the daylight. Frank reached into his pocket, dug out a lucifer, and snapped the match to life with a thumbnail. He held it down so that the glare from the flame washed over the men he had killed. Terrell and the man whose name Frank didn't know lay on their sides, facing away from him. But Dewey had landed flat on his back and lay that way still, with his arms flung out to the sides. His vest had fallen open so that the light from the lucifer shone clearly on the breast of his shirt, and on the five-pointed silver star set inside a silver circle carved from a Mexican 5-peso piece. Frank recognized it with a shock that went through him all the way to the bone. Pinned to the dead man's chest was the badge of the Texas Rangers. The flame reached Frank's fingers. He shook out the lucifer and dropped it at his feet, only to take another one from his pocket and light it. He stepped over to the other two men and used the toe of his boot to roll them onto their backs. He wanted to make sure they wore Ranger badges too. They did. Frank hadn't seen the badges during the confrontation because what little daylight had been left was at the backs of the three men, throwing their fronts into even deeper shadow.
Oh, damn it. I should have noticed those silver stars.
The dead men's horses, spooked by the shooting, had wandered off a short distance. Frank walked over and rounded them up, taking the reins of all three animals and leading them back to the corral, where he tied them to the top rail. Stormy was all right where he was and would stay in front of the house, ground-hitched, until Frank told him otherwise.
Guard, Wolf.
What are you still doing here? You have to get away before anybody comes to look for those men.
They're Rangers. Texas Rangers.
I know.
What were they doing here? Why did they shoot your husband?
I heard one of them call you Frank Morgan. Is that your name?
It is.
The one they call the Drifter?
Some do.
I heard about how you helped Cecil Tolliver a while back. You even rode with the Rangers when they were chasing that Black Scorpion fella.
That's right.
But you don't know what the Rangers are really like around here. They don't really care about the law. They just run things to suit themselves.
How's your husband?
Sleeping right now. He needs a doctor, but I reckon it'll be tomorrow before I can get one out here from town.
You don't have any ranch hands you can send to San Rosa?
There are a couple of boys who work here during the day, but they go home at night. That's all Howard and I can afford.
I'll fetch a sawbones then. But first, I want to know what happened before I rode up. The whole story.
Well, I reckon I owe you that much. We raise horses here, Mr. Morgan, not longhorns. Mighty good horses, if I do say so myself. A couple of days ago, Howard was in the settlement, and that Captain Wedge came up to him and told him he wanted to buy some of our riding stock for the Rangers. But the price he offered Howard wasn't even half of what the horses are really worth. When Howard told Captain Wedge he couldn't sell them for that price, Wedge got upset and said that since it was for the Rangers, he could just take the horses if he wanted to and not pay Howard a dime. Howard, bless his heart, isn't much of one for arguing. He just shook his head and told Wedge he couldn't do that. Wedge went on his way, and Howard figured it was all over. But today, those men showed up and said they'd come for the horses. When Howard said they couldn't take them, that man, the first one you shot, he pulled his gun and shot Howard. He didn't warn him or anything, just shot him.
Don't worry, ma'am. I'll ride on to San Rosa tonight and see that the doctor comes out to tend Howard.
What about those men?
Does Howard have a pistol?
What? A pistol? Well, yes, but why do you want to know?
Better let me have it for a minute.
Doris went into the bedroom and came back with a coiled shell belt and holstered Colt.
He usually wears it when he's out working on the ranch, but he'd already taken it off for the evening. We were gonna be eating supper soon.
Frank took the revolver out of the holster and checked to see that it was loaded. It was, with 5 rounds in the cylinder and the hammer resting on an empty. He carried the gun outside, cocked it, and fired 1 round into the ground. Then he put it back in the holster with the hammer still on the spent cartridge. Frank came back inside and gave the Colt and the gun belt back to the woman.
Howard's not much of a hand with a gun, is he?
Bless his heart, no. He's a hard worker and a fair shot with a rifle, but nobody would ever mistake him for a gunfighter.
Good. If anybody asks, he's about to start cleaning this pistol when it went off and accidentally shot him in the shoulder. You understand that, Mrs. Longwell?
Yes. Yes, I think I do.
You never saw those three outside. They never rode up here.
That's right. Howard and I haven't had any visitors this evening until you rode up.
And that was after Howard accidentally plugged himself. So when I saw that he was hurt, I offered to ride to San Rosa and fetch the doc.
And that was very kind of you.
Frank nodded and went out, taking up Stormy's reins and leading the Appaloosa toward the corral and the ranger's horses. He untied the other horses and led them away from the corral. Doris Longwell stepped into the doorway with the light behind her as Frank bent and hefted each corpse in turn, throwing the bodies over their saddles.
You might ought to get a broom and brush out all these hoof prints once I'm gone.
You're taking a big chance, Mr. Morgan.
No reason for this trouble to come back on you and your husband. I'm the one who shot these men.
To save us?
Well, that was part of it. But they threatened to take my horse, too. And I'm a mite touchy about things like that.
Be careful, Mr. Morgan.
I intend to.
Frank lashed the bodies in place and then mounted up himself.
Come on, Wolf.
Frank rode out, leading the other horses with their grisly burdens and putting the Longwell spread behind them. He rode toward the Rio Grande, steering by the stars and his own reliable sense of direction. He reached the river a short time later. The moon had not yet risen, so it was a dark night. One by one, he lifted the bodies from the horses. He unpinned the badges from their shirts and threw them out into the river as far as he could. Then he rolled the dead men off the bank into the water. The Rio Grande was a slow-moving stream, but it had enough of the current to carry the corpses downriver for quite a way. They might travel for miles if they didn't hang up on some sort of snag. Then Frank led the now riderless horses across the river to Mexico. He removed the saddles and hid them in some thick chaparral. Then he used the sombrero Don Felipe had given him to swap the horses' rumps and send them trotting off to the south. Somebody would probably find the animals and claim them. At the very least, he had delayed the discovery of what had happened at the Longwell Ranch, hopefully for several days. Frank made his way back to the road and turned left this time toward San Rosa. The moon rose, providing enough light so that he could push Stormy at a faster pace. It wasn't long before he spotted a small clump of twinkling lights up ahead. The lights grew larger, and he knew he was approaching the settlement. A few minutes later, he got his first look at San Rosa as he walked the Appaloosa down the main street. It was a typical Texas cow town, with a main street lined with businesses for several blocks, a few cross streets, and a scattering of houses and churches around the downtown district. The Spanish influence from nearby Mexico could be seen in the large open plaza in the center of town, and in the architecture of the buildings made of adobe. There were frame buildings, too, including a couple of false-fronted saloons. Quite a few horses were tied up at the hitch rails in front of each oasis, and a few people strolled along the boardwalks in spite of the relative lateness of the hour. A lot of the citizens of San Rosa probably went to bed with the chickens, but not everybody. Frank hailed one of the men on the boardwalk.
Is there a doctor in this town?
Oh, there are three. Now, you don't want Doc Caldwell tending to you. Unless you just have to, mister. I don't reckon he's been completely sober since 85 or 86. Doc Kuykendall's, he's gone down to Laredo. That leaves Doc Irvin, I reckon.
Where can I find him?
Oh, right on down the street a couple of blocks. You look for a white house on the left side of the road. Doc lives there with his wife and his son. He got his office there, too.
Much obliged.
Hey, mister. You ain't a Mexican, are you?
No.
Then how come you wearing a Mexican hat?
Keep the sun off my head.
Frank found the doctor's house without any trouble. Doc Irvin was a tall, spare man in late middle age with a wife and a half-grown son. Frank explained that he had ridden up to the Longwell Ranch right after Howard Longwell had accidentally shot himself in the shoulder.
I'll get my buggy and ride out there right away. I know the Longwells, good people. Bob, go out back and hitch up the buggy. We're going on a call.
Frank walked back out to untie Stormy's reins from the neat picket fence around the yard. He mounted up and rode along the street toward one of the saloons. San Rosa's only cafe appeared to be closed for the night, but Frank hoped he could get a cup of coffee and maybe something to eat at the saloon. It was called the Border Palace, according to the sign on its false front.
You stay here, Wolf.
Frank tied Stormy to the hitch rail.
Morgan?
Captain, I didn't expect to see you again so soon after I rode in.
I didn't expect to see you at all. I thought you'd been killed down there in Mexico when we had that ruckus with the Black Scorpions gang.
Hung around to look for me, did you?
Well, nobody knew where you'd gotten off to. And I had wounded men to get back across the border and take care of. Now, I'm sorry if that rankles you, Morgan. But my first duty is to my men.
I reckon I can understand that. Anyway, I'm all right.
And I'm glad to hear it. Come inside and have a drink with me.
You weren't about to leave?
It was nothing that can't wait. Come on. Couple of beers, barkeep.
Well, what's that, Captain?
For the beers.
You know I can't charge you, Captain.
Nonsense. I always pay my way.
No, sir. You know your money's no good here, Captain Wedge.
Well, I'm damned if I'm going to stand here all night arguing with you. Drink up, Morgan.
You have any coffee on the stove? Maybe something to eat?
Are you one of the Rangers, sir?
Nope.
I got a pot of stew in the back and coffee, too.
Bring it on. And I'll be paying for it.
Sure, mister.
Lane's got a burr up his butt about something.
Seemed pleasant enough to me.
Where have you been, Morgan? It's been almost 2 weeks since you disappeared.
I was a guest at the rancho of Don Felipe Almanzar.
Huh. Almanzar, eh? I don't know the man, but I hear he's a troublemaker and hates gringos. Especially Cecil Tolliver.
He was hospitable enough to me.
Well, you're lucky he didn't kill you. One of my men said he thought he saw you chasing after the Black Scorpion. Is that right?
I went after him, but I didn't get him.
Did you get a good look at him?
Not really. Always had his mask on. But it wouldn't have mattered if I did. I wouldn't have known who he was, now would I?
No, I reckon not. I just thought you might be able to describe him. A good description might help us catch up to him one of these days. I could pass it on to the Rurales, too. They'd like to catch that son of a bitch.
I don't know that I'd be too helpful to the Rurales if I was you, Captain. From what I heard over there, they've gone bad. Turned renegade.
Well, I can't be. I know the commander of the local company, Captain Estancia. He's a fine officer.
Is that so?
That's right. You don't know what you're talking about, Morgan.
I'm just going by what I heard.
Well, you heard wrong. Are you going back out to the Rock and Tea?
Thought I would tomorrow.
What brings you to town tonight?
I was looking for a doctor.
A doctor? You don't look hurt to me.
Wasn't for me. I rode up to a little ranch outside of town where a fella had accidentally shot himself in the shoulder while he's cleaning his six gun. When I saw how bad he was hurt, I offered to fetch a sawbones for him. Doc Irvin's on his way out there now.
Hombre shot himself, did he? You get his name?
Longwell, I think. Harry, Howard, something like that.
Howard Longwell is his name. I know the man. Raises horses. You say he shot himself?
That's right.
You didn't see anybody else around the place?
No. I don't think so. Nobody but his wife. Should I have?
Oh, no. I was just curious. Maybe I'll ride out there and see if he's all right. Find out if there's anything he needs.
That's neighborly of you.
We're just doing my job. Protecting the people along the border.
I'm much obliged. What I owe you?
Four bits will cover it.
I'll be seeing you, Morgan. You plan on staying in these parts long?
For a while.
Pardon me, mister, but are you and Captain Wedge friends?
I wouldn't say that. We're acquainted. From the looks of it, the captain's not a very popular hombre around here.
Nobody said that.
Take it easy, amigo. Like I told you, Wedge and I aren't friends. Fact of the matter is, I don't care much for him.
Well, I ain't saying anything against him. Nobody is.
Because you're all afraid to?
So, how's the stew?
Well, mighty good. Just what I needed. Do you know Miss Roanne Williamson? She has a dress shop or something like that here in town.
Well, sure, I know Miss Williamson. Fine lady. Her shop is down the street a block on the other side. It'll be closed at this time of night, though.
Do you happen to know where Miss Williamson lives?
She's got quarters in the back of her shop, I think. I ain't rightly sure about that.
I'm obliged for the food and the information.
Frank finished his meal and went out of the saloon. Frank untied Stormy from the hitch rail and led him down the street. Wolf padded along beside them. Frank's keen eyes searched the businesses along the boardwalk, looking for Roanne's dress shop. A sudden deep-throated growl from Wolf warned him. Frank stopped short and heard the wind rip of a bullet as it passed right in front of his face. Another step and the slug would have blown a hole in his head. He threw himself forward, diving and rolling behind a water trough as the bushwhacker's gun blasted again. This time, the bullet sizzled right behind Frank. He had known the ambusher would try to correct his aim. That was why he had flung himself forward. His peacemaker was in his hand as he came up on one knee behind the water trough. Frank triggered twice. Wolf had the bushwhacker cornered.
Wolf!
Frank vaulted over the water trough and sprinted toward the alley. Another muzzle flash split the darkness, and Frank felt the sombrero fly off his head as a bullet tore through it. He fired twice more, but didn't know if he hit the gunman or not. His foot struck something soft and yielding. He went to a knee and thrust out a hand, feeling the coarse hair of the big cur.
Wolf.
To his relief, Wolf whimpered and moved around on the floor of the alley. Frank heard a swift, sudden rataplan of hoofbeats that faded into the distance. The bushwhacker had reached his horse and gotten away. Frank holstered his Colt and ran both hands over Wolf's big, muscular body, searching for a wound. He found a bloody gash on the animal's flank. Thankfully, that seemed to be Wolf's only injury. Wolf struggled to get to his feet. Frank helped him and thought that the shock of being shot might have numbed Wolf's nerves for a few minutes and knocked his legs out from under him. Wolf was still unsteady, but seemed to be generally all right.
Come on, boy. Let's see about getting you patched up.
Frank slid his arms under Wolf's belly and picked him up. Wolf was a big creature, weighing close to 100 pounds, maybe a little more than that. Frank carried him like a baby, though, cradling the big animal against him. When he reached the street, he turned in the same direction he'd been going before somebody tried to kill him. Stormy trailed along behind without being led. Frank noticed that no one had emerged from any of the buildings to see what all the shooting was about. That realization brought a frown to his face. Gunshots always brought people out. The fact that these hadn't told Frank something. San Rosa was a frightened town. A moment later, Frank spotted the sign on the front of one of the frame buildings that read Williamson's Dress Shop. The front of the building was dark, but he thought he saw a faint glow in the back. Roanne might still be up. He climbed to the building's little porch and kicked on the door.
Miss Williamson! Roanne!
A moment later, the glow he had glimpsed through the window got brighter as someone approached the front door from inside with a lamp.
Who's out there? We're closed.
It's Frank Morgan, Roanne.
Frank, is it really you? What in the world?
It's me, all right. I need a little help. Wolf's been shot.
Oh, my God. Is he hurt bad?
I don't think so.
Oh, come in, come in. I was afraid I was never going to see you again, Frank.
And here I turn up on your doorstep with the dog in my arms.
I'll take you any way I can get you, Frank Morgan.
Frank carried Wolf inside, and Roanne closed the door behind them. Wolf rested comfortably on the floor of Roanne's kitchen. Frank had cleaned the gash in his side and tied a bandage in place over it. Wolf would be sore for a few days, but Frank was confident that the animal would be back to normal quickly. Frank and Roanne sat at the kitchen table, sipping from cups of coffee Roanne had poured from the pot on the stove. While he was tending to Wolf, Frank had told her a little about what had happened.
Who would want to kill you like that, Frank?
I'm not sure, but it seems to me that the most likely hombre is Nathan Wedge.
I don't like Captain Wedge, but he is a Texas Ranger.
He swore an oath to uphold law and order, and lurking in an alley trying to kill someone isn't what I'd call enforcing the law.
To some men, an oath is just words. Doesn't mean anything. They don't realize that words are what men live by. You can't go changing them to mean something they don't.
You're saying that Wedge and his men have become outlaws.
Three of the rangers gunned down a rancher named Howard Longwell this evening, just because he wouldn't let them steal some of his horses.
Oh my God! I know the Longwells! Is Howard dead?
No, just wounded. I sent Doc Irvin out there to patch him up. But as far as Doc or anyone else in town knows, Longwell accidentally shot himself while he's cleaning his gun.
Is Doris all right?
She's fine. Just shaken up.
What happened to the men who shot Howard?
They won't shoot anybody else.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, Frank. In fact, I didn't hear anything you just told me about the Longwells or Captain Wedge and the Rangers.
I reckon that'd be the smartest thing you could do, Rowan.
I'm touched, though, that you trusted me.
You strike me as a trustworthy sort of woman.
I'm glad to hear that.
Good. Because I'm gonna ask you to look after Wolf for me while I'm gone.
Of course, I'd be happy to. But where are you going?
Can't stay here tonight. That wouldn't be proper.
When a lady gets to be my age, Frank, she places less value on propriety than she might have when she was younger.
I think I'll ride on down to the Rockin' T. There's enough moonlight so that I can follow the trail with no trouble.
Oh. All right. I'll take good care of Wolf.
Before I go, though, tell me what's been going on around here while I was gone.
Things have gotten worse, no doubt about that. Captain Wedge seemed furious when he came back without catching the Black Scorpion. He seemed to think that the gang has supporters and informers around here, and he began interrogating people that he suspected of being connected in some way with the Black Scorpion. The questioning got pretty rough at times from what I heard, but he never found out anything.
Reckon that made him that much more angry and frustrated.
That's right. He hasn't actually declared martial law yet, but things are heading in that direction. He relieved our town marshal, Walt Duncan, of his duties and said that the Rangers were completely responsible for maintaining law and order now. He told Heck Carmichael, the operator at the telegraph office, that no messages could be sent or delivered unless they were cleared through the Rangers first. So nobody's been able to get in touch with the county sheriff, and there's no deputy on duty up here. But everybody has sort of gone along with that. After all, Captain Wedge and his men are Rangers. Even if Captain Wedge has turned renegade, why would he want to kill you? Why would he think that you represent a threat to him?
Other than the fact that he just doesn't like me, I reckon he knows I've got a reputation for sticking my nose in wherever there's trouble. He knows that I've worked with the Rangers, the honest Rangers, before, and I'm called the Drifter for a reason. I usually don't stay in one place for very long. Could be he's afraid that if I ride on, word of what he's doing here will get out, and the governor might send in some other rangers to investigate.
Well, it sounds to me like you'd better be very careful.
I intend to be.
Frank finished his coffee and scratched Wolf's ears for a minute.
You stay here with Rowan, boy.
Frank, I meant what I said about being careful.
So did I.
With Rowan standing so close to him like that, with her face tilted up to his, Frank did the natural thing. He kissed her. Frank slipped out the back door of the building that housed both her business and her home. At Frank's signal, Stormy came around the building to him. Taking the reins, Frank led the Appaloosa behind the other buildings along San Rosa's main street until he came to the one where the bushwhacker had lurked. He lit a match and looked for anything that might give him a clue to the gunman's identity, but he didn't see anything. Too many people moved along this alley during the day for any footprints to stand out among the welter of prints on the ground. He did find the sombrero Don Felipe had given him, still lying where it had fallen after being shot off his head. He shook his head ruefully as he saw the neat hole drilled all the way through the high crown. A few inches lower, and he'd be a candidate for the Undertaker now. After slapping the sombrero back on his head, Frank mounted up and turned Stormy to the east, riding out of town and circling for a mile or so before angling back to the main road. No one tried to stop him as he trailed south toward the Rocking Tee. But then a challenge came from the grove of cottonwoods beside the road.
Hold it right there, hombre.
Nick? Nick Holmes?
Who's there?
It's Frank Morgan.
Oh, Mr. Morgan, what are you doing out here in the middle of the night? Ben said he'd heard a rumor you were still in Mexico.
I've been south of the border, all right. That's where I picked up this big hat. But I'm back now, and I need to see Cecil.
Well, come ahead. Just ride him out easy when you get to the house, so nobody gets trigger happy.
What's going on, Nick? Has there been more trouble while I was gone?
Hell, there's been nothing but trouble. I don't know if it's Almanzar's gunnies or the Black Scorpions bunch, but rustlers have hit us nearly every night, and the Rangers don't do a damn thing to stop it. That Captain Wedge treats us like we're the lawbreakers.
That's why your father-in-law has extra guards out?
Yes, sir. Every trail in and out of the ranch has men posted on it around the clock. There were a couple of rifles besides mine trained on you when you rode up.
Well, keep up the good work. Trouble's liable to come calling at any time.
With that, Frank rode on, heading for the ranch headquarters. Quite a few lights were burning in the ranch house when he came within sight of it. Several men emerged from the barn and walked out to meet Frank. He saw the rifles in their hands.
Take it easy, fellas. It's Frank Morgan.
Frank!
Cecil Tolliver waved the rifle-toting cowboys back to the barn.
Good Lord, where did you come from? I didn't know if you'd ever get back this way. We heard you were down in Manana land.
That's right. I've been in Mexico for a while. They have the same sort of trouble down there that you do up here, Cecil.
How can that be? All our troubles come from Mexico.
That's where you're wrong. We need to have a long talk.
Sounds fine to me. Come on inside. Peg will be glad to see you. Where'd you get that Mexican hat?
Mexico.
The women folk have gone on to bed, but Ben and Daryl and I were chewing the fat in the kitchen. You're sure welcome to join us.
Ben, how are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, first of all, tell us about the Black Scorpion. We know the Rangers caught up to his bunch, but let him get away. And Captain Wedge said he thought you'd been killed in the ruckus, Frank.
Came close. I even tangled with the Black Scorpion himself.
By God, I hope you give him a wallop from me.
I'm the one who got walloped. Scorpion got away from me. That time.
Well, you met him again?
I did. And I found out something about him. He's not a bandito at all.
Not a bandito? That's crazy.
Ask the farmers and the other common folks on the other side of the Rio Grande about the Black Scorpion. They'll tell you that he and his men were just trying to fight a bunch of brutal, corrupt rurales. They're the real banditos.
No, that don't make any sense. I know for a fact that the Black Scorpion and his men have raided on this side of the river.
That's right. They were trying to break up a smuggling operation that the captain of the Rurales runs on both sides of the border.
Quickly, Frank filled them in on everything he had learned about Captain Estancia and the Rurales. He didn't mention that he knew the Black Scorpion's true identity. Revealing that now wouldn't serve any purpose.
Well, I suppose there could be something to that. I can believe that a company of Rurales would go bad. From all I've heard about them, they's always been sort of a shady bunch.
I think you got something of the same sort going on up here.
What do you mean by that?
I mean the way the Rangers under Nathan Wedge have taken control of everything around here and are running things with an iron fist.
We were just talking about that.
Somebody else coming, boss.
The four men stepped outside as a buggy rolled to a stop beside the porch. Frank recognized the lean figure of Doc Irvin at the reins. His son Bob sat beside him, a chunky boy with a scowl on his face.
Hello, Doc. What brings you out here?
I thought you might like to know what happened to Howard Longwell, Cecil. Well, Mr. Morgan, I didn't expect to run into you again so soon.
You two know each other?
This fellow brought me the news that Howard Longwell had been shot.
Shot?
That's right. However, he didn't mention that Howard was gunned down by some of Wedge's erstwhile Rangers.
I told you Longwell accidentally shot himself, Doc.
Yes, and under the circumstances, I forgive you for lying to me. I suppose you weren't sure who you could trust and who you couldn't in San Rosa.
That's about the size of it.
Howard, however, knew he could trust me, so he and Doris told me what really happened. You saved their lives, sir. Thank you. The Longwells are good people.
I don't know what the hell's going on here.
Just what we were afraid of. The Rangers have crossed the line. They've gone renegade, damn them.
So you already knew about Wedge and his men?
I got a pretty good idea pretty fast once I rode up to the Longwell place earlier this evening. Found three of Wedge's men trying to steal Longwell's horses after putting a bullet through his shoulder.
Damn. Now let's all go inside. We've got a lot to talk about.
For the next half hour, Frank heard more about how the Rangers had tightened their grip on the area in the past couple of weeks.
We've got to do something about this. We can't just let Wedge buffalo us.
No one man is any match for the Rangers. Even with all your crew, Cecil, you'd be outnumbered.
That's why we need to get together, all you ranchers and some of the men from town who aren't afraid to stand up to Wedge. Figure out a way to act in concert.
That's a good idea, Doc. We can have a meeting here. You'll spread the word, won't you?
I reckon I can do that. I travel all over the area tending to the sick and injured. Wedge won't be suspicious of me.
You'd better send a rider to Austin, too. Write a letter to the governor and ask him to send some honest rangers down here. That would be a better way to break Wedge's stranglehold than if you try to fight him yourself. That would just make you and your friends look like criminals.
Mr. Morgan has a point.
Maybe so. And I'll write that letter. But if Wedge gets any more high-handed before the real rangers can get here, there's liable to be trouble. You'll stand with us if there is?
I reckon you know the answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon I do. And I'm sorry I asked it. We've talked a lot, now we got a lot to think about. I'm gonna turn in. Doc, you and Bob will stay the night since it's so late?
Yes. And we're much obliged.
Frank, you can have the same room you did before.
Thanks. I'll admit that I'm a mite tired. I'll turn in as soon as I've seen to my horse.
Some of the boys can do that.
No, thanks. I want to handle it myself.
Tolliver nodded, and Frank went out to take Stormy over to the barn and find an empty stall. He was unsaddling the Appaloosa when a footstep made him turn, his hand dropping to the butt of his gun. Ben Tolliver stepped forward in the shadowy barn, his hands held out empty to show that he wasn't a threat.
It's just me, Mr. Morgan. I wanted to talk to you.
About Carmen, I'll bet.
Is she all right?
She was fine when I left the hacienda. Far as I know, she still is.
Thank you for not saying anything to my pa. He just wouldn't understand.
Pretty soon he may have to. I don't think you're going to be able to keep your secret much longer.
Why not?
Because I got a letter for him from Don Felipe Almanzar, asking for a meeting between the two of them 6 days from now in San Rosa, so that they can hash everything out and put an end to their feud.
That's impossible. Don Felipe would never agree to such a thing. Neither would Pa.
It was my idea. But Don Felipe came around to my way of thinking.
I don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
This could be just what you and Carmen need, Ben. If your fathers agree to get along again, or at least not to hate each other, there's no reason the two of you can't admit how you feel. There wouldn't be any reason to keep it secret anymore.
That would be wonderful. But they've hated each other for so long.
For no good reason. Just a prideful misunderstanding.
Yeah, but it's hard to believe it could ever happen. Did you say anything about it to my pa?
Not yet. He had enough to do tonight. What with this problem with the Rangers. Maybe we can get that settled, and then we'll see about patching things up between him and Don Felipe.
That might be best. But there are those rustlers, too, and the Black Scorpion.
The Black Scorpion never was your enemy, Ben. You might as well get that through your head. And I'm convinced the Rangers are behind all the rustling. Although I can't prove it yet.
Those men who jumped me and Paul that evening when we first met you? Do you know who they were?
I know who they weren't. They weren't working for Don Felipe, and they weren't the Black Scorpion's bunch.
Then who?
Maybe some of Wedge's friends, with some recruits from below the border to make it look good. So either Almanzar or the Black Scorpion would get the blame. Tell me, had your father had any trouble with Wedge before that evening?
Well, sure. In fact, Paul was the first one around here to start talking about how Wedge was coming down on folks too hard. Like he was trying to take over or something.
So Wedge might have gotten the idea that your father was starting to stir up trouble for him. He wouldn't have wanted Cecil to rouse the whole border country against him.
Like we're trying to do now.
Exactly. What Wedge was worried about is starting to come true. But a couple of weeks ago, he thought he could nip the problem in the bud by getting rid of your pa and laying the blame for it on either Almanzar or the Black Scorpion.
It would have worked, too, if you hadn't come along when you did.
If our theory is true, Then I reckon I've been a thorn in Wedge's side right from the start.
You're lucky he didn't just kill you when you went across the border with him after the Black Scorpion.
I reckon he's just biding his time. If I hadn't got separated from him and his bunch of gunnies, I doubt if I'd have made it back across the Rio Grande alive.
Sure is a complicated state of affairs, isn't it?
It is, at that.
Though an air of tension hung over the border country for the next couple of days, there were no outbreaks of violence. During those 2 days, according to the plan worked out with Doc Irvin, the physician was traveling around the area ostensibly on medical calls. But actually, he was telling the other ranchers to come to the Rocking Tee after dark on the second night so they could try to figure out what to do about Nathan Wedge and the renegade Texas Rangers. Some of the men from San Rosa would probably attend the meeting, too. Tolliver had chosen one of the cowhands, a fresh-faced youngster named Hardy, to ride downriver to Laredo and send the letter that Tolliver had written to the governor of Texas outlining the situation and asking for help. Hardy had set out at night on a fast horse, hoping to escape notice in case Wedge was having the ranch watched. So, all they could do was bide their time and wait for the meeting. Around noon on the second day, Frank sought out Cecil Tolliver and made a suggestion.
Why don't you see if Peggine and the girls would be willing to go into San Rosa and visit Rowan for a few days?
You really think that's necessary?
I'm convinced Wedge has already tried to kill you once, Cecil. If he got wind of this meeting, he might see it as a chance to wipe out all his opposition at the same time.
Yeah, I trust Doc. He's a sly old bird. He won't let Wedge know what's going on.
I trust Doc, too. But there are other people who know about the meeting now. And I don't know how careful all of them will be. It's just a precaution, but I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, what you say makes sense, Frank, but you don't know that woman of mine. If she thinks I'm trying to get her out of harm's way, it'll just make her more bound and determined to stay.
Maybe you can tell her that she needs to go in order to get your daughters to go. Appeal to her maternal instinct.
Yeah, it could be you're right. But I still think Peggine will outsmart me somehow. She always does.
To Cecil's surprise, Peggine agreed to go into San Rosa with Jesse and Deborah and put up no argument about it. She didn't allow any protest from the young women either. By the middle of the afternoon, they had one of the ranch buckboards loaded with enough bags for a visit of several days. The women kissed their husbands goodbye and then drove away, trailed by a couple of well-armed cowboys who would escort them to the settlement and then return to the Rocking Tee. With that taken care of, the men settled down to wait again. Frank suggested that they do something useful to pass the time. They cleaned their guns. An hour after dark, wearing a Stetson he had borrowed from Darrell Forrest, Frank Morgan went into the barn, which was lit by lanterns hung at intervals along the walls. Between 30 and 40 men were in there, all the ranchers from up and down the river, including Howard Longwell, his arm in a sling, who had gotten out of bed over his wife's objections to come here tonight. Doc Irvin and half a dozen men from San Rosa, one of them the former Marshal Walt Duncan, who had been relieved of his position by the Rangers, and several Tejanos, Mexican by heritage, but whose families had lived and farmed on the Texas side of the river for generations. At times in the past, there had been friction between the gringos and those of Mexican ancestry, but tonight they were all Texans, and they all wanted to find a solution to the threat represented by the Rangers who had gone bad. The Rocking Tee punchers had piled some bales of hay at the front of the barn to form a platform. Cecil Tolliver climbed up onto it and raised his hands for quiet, calling,
"Settle down now, boys, settle down. Now y'all know why you're here tonight. For weeks now, ever since the Rangers under Captain Nathan Wedge rode into the area supposedly to enforce the law, things been getting worse along the border. All of us cattlemen have lost stock to rustlers. Gangs of gunmen ride unmolested through the night, shooting and terrorizing. Bandidos from below the Rio Grande have raided our ranches and our settlements. Smugglers bring across opium and gold and take back guns. And nobody bothers them. And if anybody says a word about it to the Rangers, trouble comes down hard on his head. Lately, though, things have gotten even worse. Walt Duncan, who's done a good job for years as the marshal in San Rosa, got his badge taken away from him by Captain Wedge. According to the Rangers, Walt just ain't needed anymore. And Het Carmichael at the telegraph office isn't allowed to send a wire unless the Rangers approve it first. Likewise, he can't deliver any message that comes in until Wedge or one of the other Rangers have seen it. Buckshot Roberts at the San Rosa Sun, he can't print his newspapers anymore without the Rangers looking over his shoulder to see what he's saying. Now, that just ain't right. Now, though, they've gone too far. Y'all know Howard Longwell. 3 nights ago, some of Wedge's men rode out to Howard's ranch to take some of his horses. When Howard told them they couldn't do it, one of the bastards shot him. If our friend Frank Morgan hadn't come along when he did and ventilated those so-called Rangers, the buzzards likely would have killed Howard and Doris and stole all their horses. Howard's going to be all right. But who knows what sort of deviltry the Rangers will try next?
It sure pains me to hear you talking about the Rangers like they're outlaws or something, Cecil.
I know it. Pains me to say such things, Sam. All of us remember what it was like in Texas after the war, when the Yankee carpetbaggers came in and took over and tried to force their way of living on us. They had the damn state police, and they were the worst bunch of crooks to ever call themselves lawmen. It wasn't until the carpetbaggers were booted out and the state police dissolved that the Rangers could come back and be real lawmen again. Now, I know all that, but just because the Rangers, by and large, are an honorable, straight-shooting bunch, that don't mean that some of them can't go bad from time to time. I blame Wedge. He must have decided a long time ago to cross over to the Al Hoot side, and he took his time-drawn men who felt the same way to him and getting them into the Rangers, too. And when they was ready, they rode down here with badges pinned to their chests, knowing that we'd never suspect just what polecats they really are. Took us some time to figure it out, but by God, we know it now.
But what are we going to do about it?
Hang Nathan Wedge from the nearest tree!
Hold on, hold on. I know that most of us lived through a time when the only real law was what a man packed on his hip and the only justice was a hang rope. I ain't saying that it's always been for the better, but things have changed since then. If we fight the Rangers, it's likely to look to everybody else in the state like we're the outlaws, not Wedge and his bunch. What we need is some real law in here, and that's what I've asked the governor to send us. There's a letter on the way to him right now telling him just how bad things are down here.
Well, how long is that gonna take?
Yeah, what if Wedge just wiped us all out before the governor gets around to doing anything?
That's why we're having this meeting tonight. For the time being, I think we should all send our womenfolk into San Rosa. Wedge is less likely to try anything bad as long as there are a lot of people around. You little ranchers, fellas who run one-man layouts, maybe you ought to think about gathering all together at one of your spreads and forting up there.
I can't do that. I can't just abandon my ranch.
Wouldn't be permanent-like just until Wedge is dealt with.
Yeah, well, that sounds fine and dandy, but what if it burns down my house and barn and rustles all my stock while I'm gone? What then, Tolliver? You gonna stake me to start over?
Now, hold on.
I still say we gotta fight.
Dadgummit, hush up! This ain't gonna solve anything.
Shut up. Listen. Get as many of the horses as you can inside the barn. Then spread out and hunt some good cover. They'll be here in a few minutes, and we'll give them a warm welcome.
Counting all the men who had come to the meeting, plus the few Rocking Tea cowboys who were also on hand, Frank figured they had a fighting force of at least 40 men. Wedge had no more than 30 men at his command, so the renegade rancher was in for a surprise. Frank's forehead creased in a frown as he hurried toward the house with Tolliver, Ben, Darryl, and Nick. Something was wrong. Wedge might be an outlaw, but he wasn't a fool. He had to know there was a good-sized group of fighting men at the ranch tonight. Would he attack anyway, even knowing that he would be outnumbered? Maybe Wedge wasn't outnumbered, Frank thought. Maybe he had rounded up some more gunmen somewhere. All around the ranch, in the barns, the corrals, and the bunkhouse, men were finding good spots to put up a fight.
Blow out all the lanterns!
Instantly, lights began going out all around the ranch. The house was plunged into darkness, too, as the lamps were blown out. Cecil Tolliver opened up the gun rack in his parlor and pressed Winchesters into the hands of Frank, Ben, and his sons-in-law. Frank stepped back out onto the porch and dropped to one knee, waiting to see what was going to happen.
Rockin' tea!
Rockin' tea!
Rockin' tea!
These were the surviving guards, identifying themselves so that the ranch's defenders wouldn't shoot them down. In the moonlight, Frank saw that there were only 3 of them. The other sentries must have been killed in the attack.
Rockin' tea, over here!
The cowboys veered their mounts toward the house. They flung themselves out of their saddles while the horses were still moving and stumbled up the steps to the porch.
It's Wedge! Wedge in the rock!
The cowboy who had been delivering the warning pitched forward on his face, his hat flying off. Frank saw the dark stain already spreading on the back of the Wadi's shirt where the bullet had struck him. Snapping the Winchester to his shoulder, Frank fired at the muzzle flash he had seen just before the young cowboy was hit. He didn't know if his bullet found its mark or not, but as he worked the rifle's lever and threw another cartridge in the chamber, he knew one thing. The battle for the Rocking Teeth was on. Frank bent and grabbed the cowboy who had been shot.
Give me a hand with him.
One of the other punchers got hold of the wounded man under the other arm. Together, they dragged him inside the house as Tolliver, Ben, Daryl, and Nick opened fire from the windows they had thrown open. They slammed lead at the dark area near one of the barns where the shot had come from. Defenders opened up from the barns and the corrals, too, and as Frank stepped back to the doorway, he saw several men on horseback fleeing from that deadly storm of bullets. The moonlight revealed something that sent a shock to him. A couple of the fleeing gunmen wore high-crowned sombreros, just like the ones the Rurales wore. Frank bit back a curse as he realized what that meant. There was a connection between Wedge and Estancia, all right. And now the two outlaws had probably joined forces in an effort to wipe out their opposition on this side of the border. The presence of the Rurales also meant that the ranch's defenders no longer outnumbered the attackers. Estancia would be able to throw at least 20 men into the fray on Wedge's side, maybe even more than if he'd already gotten some of his reinforcements from Mexico City. The position of the honest Texans had changed abruptly from perilous but tenable to downright precarious. Those thoughts flashed through Frank's mind in a matter of seconds. No more shots came from the attackers, but he knew better than to think Wedge and Estancia had withdrawn their forces. Those two bastards were just getting started. That hunch was confirmed a few minutes later. A large group of riders charged the house and the barns, blazing away as they galloped forward.
Let them have it!
Frank stood at the edge of the doorway, partially shielded by the jam, and played a deadly tune on the Winchester, crashing out the shots as fast as he could work the lever and squeeze the trigger. Frank saw a couple of the gunmen pitch from their saddles, but most of them survived the charge unscathed and continued spraying the house and barns with lead. Sparks flew in the air as something tumbled end over end through the night. Frank heard it hit the porch and saw the sparks roll against the wall of the house.
Dynamite!
That end of the porch and part of the wall disappeared in a burst of flame and noise that shook the earth. The concussion slammed Frank off his feet. As he lay there for a moment, half in and half out of the door, stunned by the explosion, he heard several more blasts like the first one. The raiders had brought plenty of dynamite with them. Frank pushed himself to his knees. Somehow, he managed to hang on to the rifle. He saw one of the raiders veer his mount toward the house. The man was one of the sombrero-wearing Rurales, and he had another stick of dynamite in his hand, the fuse sputtering and throwing off sparks as it burned. Without really aiming, Frank jerked the Winchester to his shoulder and fired. The Rurale flipped backward off his horse, and the stick of dynamite went straight up in the air. It fell among some of the raiders, who then tried to rein their horses away from it. The dynamite blew, sending men and horses pinwheeling through the air. That was finally enough to blunt the charge and make some of the attackers fall back. Frank scrambled to his feet and turned toward the parlor. That was the room closest to the explosion that had rocked the house. Flames flickered up one of the walls, casting a hellish glare into the room. Everything was in disarray. Windows were shattered, pictures had been knocked off the walls, furniture was overturned. Ben Tolliver and Nick Holmes were trying to drag the unconscious forms of Cecil Tolliver and Daryl Forrest out of the room before the fire spread to them.
Ben, how bad are they hurt?
Just knocked out, I think. They were the closest to that dynamite when it went off.
Daryl was hurt worse than that, Frank saw in the glare of the flames. The young man's left arm was bent at an unnatural angle and had to be broken. Right now, though, getting out of the burning house was more important than tending to a busted arm. Frank whirled around and brought up the Winchester.
Don't shoot! It's just us!
Give Ben and Nick a hand. Get Mr. Tolliver and Daryl out the front door and head for the main barn. We'll try to fort up there.
The men had reached the porch and lifted the half-conscious Tolliver and Daryl to their feet. Frank knelt for a second beside the cowboy who'd been shot and checked for a pulse without finding one. The young man was dead.
I'll cover you. Head for the barn.
Ben, Nick, and the two punchers started across the open ground, half carrying, half dragging Tolliver and Daryl. Frank paced after them, snapping shots at every target he picked out from the moonlight chaos. Bullets whined around their heads and kicked up dust around their feet. Frank looked around and saw that the bunkhouse and the blacksmith shop were burning too. The men inside the barn had seen them coming. The door swung open far enough to let Ben and the others stagger through. As Frank ran into the barn, the defenders slammed the doors behind him.
What do we do, Morgan? There's too damn many of them.
How many men do we have left?
I don't know. Some of them must have got blown up by all that dynamite.
There are about 30 of us in here now, Morgan, counting you fellas who just got here. That leaves 8 or 10 unaccounted for. I'm afraid they must have been killed in the fighting. When those explosions went off in the bunkhouse and the blacksmith shop, the men who had sought cover there abandoned the buildings and fought their way over here.
We can't stay here. They probably saw us converging on the barn, and this is where they'll concentrate their next attack. If they got any dynamite left, they'll try to blow us to kingdom come.
So we gotta get out of here.
That's how I see it.
We can't do that. We can't run.
It's run or die, Ben.
When I was in the army during the war, we'd call it a strategic retreat. Ain't no shame in it.
But this is my home.
Mine too, Ben. But Mr. Morgan and the others are right. If we stay and fight, we'll all be killed. We need to get out, split up, and regroup later.
That's right, Nick. See about getting horses ready. Ben, you help him. We'll go out the back. I'm sure they got it covered, but at least it'll be darker that way, and they might not be able to shoot quite as well.
The battle is over, but the war isn't. That's right, isn't it?
Damn right. We're not gonna let Wedge and his friends get away with this. But when we tangle with them again, it'll be at a time and a place of our choosing.
Very well,
Here they come again!
Mount up! Mount up and bust out the back. Don't stop firing until you're well away from the barn.
About 5 miles north of here, there's a big coulee where a creek used to cut through a ridge. It'd be easily defended and we could rendezvous there tomorrow.
Sounds good to me. Spread the word as best you can, and I'll do the same.
Irvin agreed, and then hurried off to find a horse. Not all of the mounts had been brought into the barn before the fighting started, but Frank thought there were enough for everyone who was left. He reached Thorny, slid the Winchester into the saddle boot, and swung up onto the Appaloosa's back.
Go!
The bars securing the rear doors had been removed. The horses surged against the doors, throwing them open. 6 guns blazing, the men poured out of the barn and into the countryside.